Well, let me ask you about the Celtics. I'm going to start right there. 4-6. We're not going to be, you know, freaking out after 10 games into the season. But how active do you think the Celts might be and Brad Stevens in trying to fix, tweak, or just ride this out and then address things, look at things at the 15 mark, the 20-game mark, and kind of see where the dust settles then?
You know, they're an underachieving team. You know, I don't really see them as a championship contender, but when you've got, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, that's the prototypical, those are the prototypical players for the modern era. And, you know, Jaylen's been, you know, overachieving and getting better overall, but the fact you put them together, they don't, you know, the whole is less than the sum of the parts, if you will. And that's an issue. That's obviously an organizational issue that they're looking at. And, you know, one of the things that's happened so far is, you know, Ime Udoka is, you know, Brad Stevens is a guy who, when you talk to people who know him, he's a little bit, he's not interested in conflict that much. And Ime Udoka is the opposite. If you know Ime at all, he's a guy who, if he feels that there's something that needs to be addressed, he addresses it. And he is not adverse to conflict. And as a result, there's been some conflict with this team early on. He has said some things about his team that are pretty aggressive for a first-year head coach to say publicly. And then you've got some issues with players saying stuff about each other and obviously some internal issues. And really, you know, the real, you know, issue has seems to be that, you know, Jason Tatum and Brown don't share the ball as much as maybe that they could coming down the stretch of games. And Marcus Smart called them out. And Marcus Smart is not been afraid to do that, you know, in the locker room in the past. If you remember back in the bubble in Orlando, they had like this this post game situation that happened where they wouldn't open the locker room for like an hour or something because they got into something went on, furniture got moved around in the locker room or something. So this has been an issue with some of their leading guys for a couple of years now. And Udoka is the guy who was supposed to come in there and whip him into shape. And that process is happening right now. And what the result will be, I guess let's wait and see where they are around midseason.
Brian, I think that's the, to me, that seems like the Greg Popovich straight shooting influence where Udoka probably, you know, came from and where he cut his teeth. I mean, Pop is of the school that players want to be coached and, you know, we're going to do things this way because I feel this is the right way. Not that he's not going to talk to his players, but I see kind of the residue of that in what's going on in Boston. And I don't know about you, but I didn't have a problem with what Marcus Smart says as long as he had said it to Tatum and Brown beforehand, like, guys, we got to do this. And if he, it's like a coach. I mean, a lot of people are on Doc Rivers right now for what was said about Ben Simmons at the end of last year. And if he's expressed those thoughts to Ben, if Marcus Smart had expressed those thoughts to his teammates and some of the old school values, Brian, you know this, sometimes a coach like a Pat Riley or a Greg Popovich or, you know, a old school coach back in the day, after they said it to the player, they challenged them in the media. So I, you know, there's part of me that says, I'm okay with what Marcus Smart did.
Yeah, I guess they had a team meeting shortly thereafter, and from what I understand, the team meeting didn't exactly go great, but then they went down to Florida and they swept. They had a really big win in Miami the other night. Miami was really flying high at that point and then backed it up with a win over the Jazz. So that looks like a really good win right now. So we know that Boston can do it. But here's the thing. Brad Stevens, obviously not a former NBA player, has sort of a you know, a very even-keeled, intellectual-style attitude. Udoka, a former player who played on highly competitive squads, very much of a different attitude altogether. And sometimes we see this. Sometimes we see when teams change coaches, they go from one end of the spectrum to the other. In this case, the guy who was the outgoing coach picked the incoming coach. And, you know, I wonder if Brad, walking away from that job where he was saying, I wasn't able to get this done to the level that it needed to be. I wonder if he was saying, let me find somebody who has some qualities that maybe I don't have. And with the belief that that is going to energize this group because, you know, you're heavily invested in these three guys. I mean, they signed Marcus Smart to a huge contract extension in the offseason. Obviously, they're in long-term deals at the start of long-term deals with Brown and Tatum. They want those three guys to work. But like I said, they don't work at the highest level. And, you know, I covered all three of them in the with the 2019 Team USA, which I know is an extremely forgettable group. Most of your listeners probably have no idea what happened with that team. They finished seventh in the International World Cup in China. But those three guys and Kemba Walker were on that team. And the entire point of that was to get everybody to play together and use the opportunity as a chemistry building experience. And they've just, even with that team, they never really clicked on the same thing. So I think they're making a gambit to try to make it work out before they have to, you know, maybe make changes.
Speaking with Brian Windhorst from ESPN, Brian, this shows what kind of pro you are, because you segue me perfectly into my next question without even knowing. When you talk about chemistry, is this a perfect example of maybe to some extent what you're just talking about, the chemistry in Philadelphia, addition by subtraction? Or how do we put our finger on Philadelphia being 8-2, top spot in the East after 10 games without Ben Simmons and rolling along without an all-star caliber player?
Yeah, and they've had Tobias Harris out because of COVID for the last week. And Embiid missed some time. You know, he has a banged up knee already. He's missed some time. And they had a really good win, over the weekend where Embiid played so well. So they definitely have benefited from a light schedule so far. Their schedule has not been hard. You kind of see this with some of the premier teams in the league. The Lakers, for example, have had a soft schedule so far, although they're not winning that much. But when you have a team that's going to be on television a lot, they save the bigger games for after football season. So you often will see high-profile teams after the first week of the season have sort of this lull in their schedule between, during November. And so they've taken advantage of it, but they have played well. And to Paul's point about being old school, this is my 19th year covering the NBA, and I'm starting to feel like I'm getting to be old, because the more things that happen, the more time I say, boy, I like what David Stern used to say about stuff, and I like what Pat Riley used to say about stuff. And one of the things that I learned when I first got into this league was that no matter what was going on with a player, no matter what he was doing on the court, or no matter what he was doing in the locker room or the practice court, you didn't devalue him. You did not talk bad about your player. You know, those of us in the media could talk bad about your player. Maybe you talk bad about your player to your coaching staff. Maybe you'd even hear, maybe even the media would catch wind that you didn't like a player and say that you didn't like a player. But you did not devalue your player publicly. And I'm not so sure I've ever seen a player more devalued by his own team than Ben Simmons. And it goes on to this day. Now, a lot was made about what Doc said at the end of that game when they lost in the playoffs last year. And I agree that it was definitely a devaluing of the player. But I kind of give Doc a pass on that, because it was at the end of a very disappointing playoff loss. And Ben had been very disappointing in that, and it was a rough assessment, but I'll give him a pass. What they've done since then has been unconscionable, the way they've devalued him, and I just don't understand why a guy like Daryl Morey, who's noted as one of the smartest guys in the league, would condone the over and over and over devaluing of this guy. I understand what he's doing, and he's trying to violate his contract and all this kind of stuff. It's not admirable. We can all see that. But the stuff that they have done to him, and now basically questioning whether he's actually got mental health problems, that's essentially what they're saying. They're basically calling him a faker. I just can't believe that they behave this way. It's just, forget about what it is on an individual, personal basis. It's just bad business.
Well, Brian, you're definitely, I won't use the word old, you're definitely experienced, let's put it that way, when it comes to the league, because I agree with you. And I think, you know, a guy like Doc that played for people like Riley and Popovich and some of those guys, they didn't devalue, but behind closed doors, you got the message. And I just think we're in a new incarnation of the NBA right now. And I look at the Lakers right now. You look at where they are, and they've had a kind of a soft schedule, and a lot of people are kind of giving them a pass because, I mean, you were in Miami when the Heat and the Big Three started, what, 10-9 in their first 19-20 games with Wade Bosch and LeBron, and it took them some time. Is this the same kind of situation in L.A., or is it different? Because LeBron's not the same guy. Westbrook is a different kind of player in terms of sacrificing. And you know, where do you put Anthony Davis in that mix?
Well, I've issued a personal edict that I'm not going to judge the Lakers until at least Christmas because I knew that it would be a rough start. If you look at what happened with Westbrook in Houston and in Washington, the last two stops on his journeyman journey, they've gotten off to terrible starts. I think last year, don't hold me to this exact number, but I want to say the Wizards were like 1-9 in Westbrook's first 10 games that he played in because he missed some time early with a hip injury. But, you know, they got off to a terrible start with him. He's a hard guy to learn how to play with. So I'm going to, you know, and it's mostly out of respect to LeBron and AD, their greatness, that I'm gonna yield and wait to pass judgment. But I will say that, you know, trading for Russell Westbrook went against what LeBron James teams have done the last 15 years. The last 15 years, really since he was in his third or fourth year in the league, all of his teams have, you know, crawled over glass to find floor spacers and shooters, guys who could create open lanes for him and, you know, receive passes from him. In fact, the best guards that he played with were guards that didn't necessarily need to always dominate the ball and then also could shoot, all the way back to Mo Williams. I mean, you may not say that Mo Williams was a great guard for LeBron to play with, but I will disagree with you because he was a guy who could play off the ball and he could shoot. And they had two 60-win seasons him playing alongside Mo Williams. Then you have the quintessential guy in Kyrie Irving, arguably the best teammate of his career, who could do that. And even Mario Chalmers. Mario Chalmers is not going to the Hall of Fame, but Mario Chalmers was an ideal guard for LeBron to play off of, especially because he could defend. And so now you bring in Russell Westbrook, who is the exact opposite, can't shoot and needs the ball. And so that, to me, didn't make a whole lot of sense. But then it is compounded. It's compounded by the fact that they had a Buddy Hield trade on the table that they could have gotten for half the price that they paid for Westbrook. And so not only would they have been able to get a guy like Buddy Hield, who is the prototypical player that you want alongside LeBron, but they would have also been able to retain their assets, a couple more assets, their first-round pick and an extra player or two that they either could have kept and played or could have used in a separate trade. Instead, they traded all of their players, basically, and their draft pick for Russell Westbrook, who makes a lot more money than Buddy Hield. So it even limits what they can do financially. You know, let me just give you a brief example. They just Alex Caruso said, bye-bye, have a nice day. And even if you didn't want to keep Alex Caruso, which I think was a mistake, but you could have, if you were in a different situation, you could have signed and traded Alex Caruso. So you could have gotten back that $10 million trade exception in that trade. And then maybe you had your first round pick and now you're cooking with gas. You've got that trade exception in your pick and maybe you can go make another trade for that. And you still would have had Buddy Hield. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's not even just the fit of Westbrook. It's the alternate reality that you could have had if you didn't do that deal. And that to me is what we're going to end up probably judging this Lakers season on.
Hey, Brian, let me ask you then to tie in perhaps our last question here, Jonesy. I wanted to ask you about the Toronto Raptors and just your take on this team, 6-5 to start the year. But using that Lakers chatter as a jumping off point, you know, we go back to last season's trade deadline and the potential that was right there, right to the bitter end, to potentially acquire Kyle Lowry and how much of a better fit he might have been for the Lakers than a Westbrook. And maybe you can kind of hit on both the Laker impact of Kyle Lowry and just the Raptors overall 6-5 without Kyle this season.
Yeah, I can't remember what the dynamics of the offer was. I mean, I think Talen Horton Tucker was the guy that that was the issue. I mean, to me, if you asked me, and I would say this from my experience with the Cavs, you know, LeBron is the diminishing resource. There is no replacing LeBron. You know, once LeBron walks out the door, retires, there's no more of him. And so I, you know, in that situation, you do everything you possibly can to squeeze every last opportunity out. And so to me, I trade for Kyle Lowry. I do everything I can to maximize today. And tomorrow, if I'm penalized, so be it. The Cavs are sitting there, they're wheezing, they're just now getting back on their feet, but there's a banner hanging in their rafters. because they went for it. At least they went for it. And so that's why I would say, you know, going back on that, especially, you know, I guess they weren't crazy about using Tucker and they were worried about what they were going to have to pay Kyle Lowry. Well, I'm watching Kyle play in Miami. It looks pretty damn good to me. It looks pretty damn good to me. And what I will say about the Raptors, I have no idea where they're going to be in 15 days when they get off of this 8-9 on the road. And some of this road record seems a little bit of an abnormality. But you got to love what you see out of Barnes. I mean, he looks like he could really be a player. And, you know, OG is showing the improvements that I thought we might see last year. And now you're getting Siakam back. So while I don't look at this Raptors team and say, boy, this is going to be a team for their ages, I look at it as a team like I want to watch every night. And I watched the fourth quarter of their loss to Cleveland the other night, and that was a really disappointing performance, I agree. But I'm excited about where the Raptors are going. They're going to have to figure out a way to get another player. And that's going to be on the side. He's being paid a lot of money to do that. But I look at their young pieces and say, okay, they got something. And tanking last year to get a guy like Barnes was absolutely the right decision. And it looks like it really paid off for him.